This is the Top Shelf Podcast number 2 with Ginger Bill. If you don't know who Ginger Bill is, besides for the fact that he was literally a quantum physics scientist, he also is creator of Odin Lang. Now, you can see right here this beautiful video with Odin Lang and what it's able to do. It is a language designed to be really amazing when it comes to graphics and system-level programming. Now, in here, he's going to drop several hot takes, things about LSPs to package managers to language design. You got to hear it because he is incredibly smart. So please enjoy TJ and I's Top Shelf number 2. So we're going to get started. We're going to ask some pretty spicy questions. Are you ready for this?
Oh, I'm always ready.
All right. You have been quoted saying that you don't really like LSPs.
Yes.
Now, as a person who obviously will be new to the Odin language here shortly, an LSP would be very useful for me. So can you kind of explain that positioning, why you don't really like LSPs? And what is the alternative, or what do you suggest is the better way to edit and navigate code?
So firstly, if you do want an LSP for Odin, there's a lovely unofficial one called OLS, right? This is developed by, Daniel Gavin. And he's been working it really well. Many people love it as a language server. In fact, it's just another Odin compiler. Someone's developed in Odin, obviously, to do the LSP stuff. Now, I'm not against LSPs in general. I've just found that over the years, I found I was more productive when I didn't have like the IntelliSense-like behavior. And because of that, because when I wasn't relying on like the autocomplete, and I was like, oh, this is telling me where it is, I actually started remembering the code base, and I kept thinking more about the code itself than the autocompleteness, if that makes any sense.
Is it particularly the aspect of the autocomplete for LSP for you? Like, could Odin ship with an LSP that doesn't implement text document/completion? It just does references and go to definition.
Well, they easily could do. I think OLS even does that, but OLS does some have lovely features extra on top of it. This will sound bizarre. I'm advertising something I've actually never used. But again, it's not because I don't think it's a bad product. I know loads of people recommend it.
It is purely
because I've just found that I was more productive not using those sort of tools.
Okay,
I know it's a very weird thing. It's just that I didn't believe it either until I started doing it. This was about 7 years ago now. I started to stop using IDEs.
I'm not gonna argue against that point because I did Copilot for about a year, like straight, and I really wanted to make sure, like, am I missing out on this AI revolution that's currently going on before us? I never want to be a Luddite, right? My goal is to actually use the thing that is really the best for development.
Oh no, same.
I started using it, and then I quit just by accident. I actually just rewrote my vimrc, and I just forgot to install Copilot on my new computer, and that's it. So even though it was all there, Copilot code and everything was ready to rock, I just forgot to log in to GitHub, so I got no completion. And I noticed right away that I had all these weird editing habits. I'd pause, and I just wait on a for loop. And I was like, okay, this is silly. I know how to do a for loop. Why am I just pausing? I could literally just do it. And so I started just doing it, and all of a sudden I find myself writing code that I just dramatically think is better.
Yeah.
And so is that kind of the same type of experience that you kind of relied a lot on this autocomplete where you would kind of...
Yeah, very, very much so. It was very much the autocompleteness. To be clear, I still do use a form of autocomplete, like the very basic one that Sublime Text gives you, which is literally just, it sees you've written this text, write this extra text near it.
It's like a buffer complete or whatever. Effectively.
So it's a very rudimentary thing. And I still get go-to definition working. Sublime Text is fine for that because you've got syntax highlighting. So it already knows where most of the symbols are. So you can go to definition, done. So it's not like I don't have the luxuries that many people want. It's just the only thing I'm kind of lacking, quote unquote lacking, is the lack of autocomplete itself.
Okay. What about things like documentation? Do you think that having the documentation inside the editor, so like with an LSP, you can, you know, do whatever. I don't. TJ will know the exact command, but to
text
be able to show
slash hover. Yeah, there you go.
Hover to be able to show the exact documentation for that function, to be able to peruse it, or to be able to show the order of arguments plus their types. Is that something that would affect you for the positive, or do you think that also falls under this umbrella? Because this is just
Falls under the umbrella. I know it's a very weird thing. I know my opinion in this case is not that common. People think it was really good, but it's like, no, really. I know I'm just saying it just for myself. I'm not saying they're bad. These tools are not bad. I'm not saying that at all. It's just more of my productivity went up when I stopped using this. I know my productivity because I wasn't thinking. So like, for me, when I have documentation up, I have a giant 32-inch 4K monitor, so I can have like three code panels at once. So I have one that's just dedicated for like the documentation tools, then the programming, and then I have another monitor to the side of me where I have everything. So I just keep searching back and forth. So it's not really an issue for me. And a lot of the time if I'm doing documentation, like let's say it's MSDN, I've always got that up on the side and checking and seeing what it needs. And usually that extra little bit of documentation rather than the basic what parameters they are is more helpful for me.
Do you also still not use an LSP or anything else when you're writing like C++?
Nope.
Okay, because I was wondering...
they'd be really slow as well. They're really slow.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was like... we'll probably talk a little bit more about this later, but Odin doesn't have any like magic things that can happen, right? So it's like, I can't call dot parse and it does like some implicit thing where it checks what the resulting type is going to be. And like,
apparently the Odin OLS does allow you to have like, there's a feature in it apparently, which allows you to, Odin doesn't have any methods whatsoever. I mean, right. Just plain OSTAN line procedures. But if you do like X dot, it'll look for the functions that are related to that, and then we'll just autocomplete and just generate the actual function call for you. So the people saying, "Oh, I like methods." Yeah, so it does that. But the thing is the how OLS did it. To me, I'm like, well, that's what people say. I really like methods for that. I'm like, that's not a method thing. That's just the LSP thing.
Yeah,
the IDE thing, which you can literally apparently OLS already does that. So solve that problem.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was like because of the way that Odin is written. You feel like you don't need an LSP for it, but I was wondering, like, compared to something
it's
C++ or Rust. Yeah, okay, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even in a brand new language, we'll just call it Zig, why not? If you've never done Zig, if you were to start, you would just not use an LSP.
Correct, yes, because I actually want to learn the language.
Do you think there's some benefit in having to peruse the doc to find what you need? As opposed to be able to kind of like guess.
Yes, because you start learning the patterns of how those things are written. You start learning the different idioms and the different conventions that code base is using as well. Because it is literally you're like, oh, that's the patterns of how those people do it. Rather than just pretending each language is the same and they're all a bit just slightly different. It's like this one's wearing a pink hat and that one's wearing a bikini or something like that. They're all a little bit different here.
Which one is which? Which one's the pink hat language and which one is a bikini language?
Ooh, I think the pink hat language would probably be, I don't know, let's go for TypeScript. And then the bikini language is just going to be assembly. Because it's just quite bare and you can see everything.
It's true. That's a fair assessment right there. You know, because I think that generally flies in the face of at least conventional wisdom or intuitive wisdom. And just because something feels intuitive, it doesn't necessarily mean it's correct. I had an old coworker. His name is Guy Serino. He built a lot of super cool stuff, and he never worked with an LSP. And he would often say, if you really want to learn your language, if you really want to be effective, you shouldn't use an LSP. And I never really gave it much more of a shot than other than I'd turn it off for just a moment to kind of program for a while and kind of get the language a bit better. Then I just turn it back on once I got familiar with the language. And so it kind of sounds like there might – at least it's worth an exploration to go see, like, is it really good to turn it off? And does it actually, in the long run, create better habits or better understanding? Because at the end, the goal is to be really good at what you're doing, hopefully. At least that's my goal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think underrated things are, like, actually reading the docs, which with not using an LSP forces you into that, which is nice. But it's also sort of, I've done... a few times where when I start a new language, I pretty much just read the entire like language manual as I'm starting. And it's like, oh, a lot of stuff makes sense now. And it's pretty easy to follow. Like Odin, it's one huge doc. You can just, you know, control F or command F if you're into soy lattes and, you know, find in the docs where you want to go, what is this using word? And then you just find using and then you're all set.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
TJ also read 9 hours of the Vim documentation, read the entire
Vim
docs.
No, I heard.
Yeah, so he's a little bit of a masochist when it comes to reading docs.
I just wanted to prove it was possible to do. You know what I mean? It's just like,
of course,
it's really possible. You can sit down, and I read it out loud, and it took me like 10 and a half hours or whatever, right? And it's like, it's just possible to do. You can do it. Anyone can do it.
No, I bet so. Like, it's one of those things where... my knowledge of Vim is very much like, I know how to exit out of there, I'm fine. So,
nice.
I did learn it once, but I went, it's just not for me. I'm not that smart enough to learn all the different commands. I just want the default like OS commands is all I need.
So actually then follow up. Yeah. If not using an LSP, which does take much more effort and eventually pays out dividends, if other developers tell you that learning Vim Motion, though a lot of effort up front, will pay out dividends, isn't it worth a more rigorous exploration?
I have tried doing the Vim stuff, actually. So the joke about it, I do actually know a bit more Vim, but I found that I am just as productive in Sublime Text, especially with multiple cursors and such. Like, I've compared me sitting next, like, pair programming with, like, a colleague who's maybe using Vim, and I'm going just as fast as him.
Okay.
If not faster at times. So it's like, I think what you learn your tool is the thing. So I know loads of shortcuts for Sublime Text. I've been using it for now for, oh God, 13 years, Sublime Text. But it's one of those where, like, you learn your tools, you can read the docs, and I'm still learning stuff about Sublime Text to this day as well, especially all, like, the new plugin stuff and how that works and such. But I do try and keep it quite minimal, so I try and learn that thing. So when I go to another machine, it's about the same.
One more question about Sublime Text.
Yes.
Does the pop-up that says Sublime is free, but you could also pay money to support us, have you paid money?
I pay it. I've paid for it for every version.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's true hero. Did you buy WinRAR as well?
No, I do 7-zip.
Why would you? Okay, just checking. I'm just checking. Because, you know, this is very impressive. I can't believe this. Yeah. All right, hey, I think TJ, you got something, right?
I do. This is probably going to be quite a bit more spicy, I think, than the LSP take.
Well, I can already tell which one it is.
Package managers, you've been directly quoted in my stream yesterday saying Odin will never have, not just we haven't gotten around to it, Odin will never have a package manager. Hit us with why.
Right. So I have a very big taste dislike for package managers in themselves, right? Especially for programming languages. So now I know this is a very, very controversial take. So don't worry, I already know where I'm going to go with this. So for me, what is package managers, the first thing? And also, first even not, what's a package? So most languages don't even have a well-defined concept of packages, firstly. There are very few that actually have a well-defined one. And they're all, like, the package manager itself is trying to cope to define it. So once the definition of what a package is well-defined in the language itself, designing a package manager, you can do it in a weekend. Because it's literally about 5 tables in a database, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right, okay, it's not difficult.
Yeah, especially if you use GitHub, you literally, it's just then a YAML file plus a bunch of Git links, and you're like, there you go, there's your packages.
But my issue with package managers is that, this is going to sound weird, I don't think everything should be automated, and package managers are one of them. Because what it's automating is dependency hell.
Nice.
Okay, so what you're trying to say is,
it's a weird opinion. I know.
I don't think it's a weird opinion. I think I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
When you use JavaScript or you use Rust, you effectively get 1,000 packages to do anything. Is that kind of what you're saying? Is that the side effect of the ease of packages is that the language offsets what it should be doing?
Well, it's not the packages. The problem is you don't know what you're downloading at this point, right? So you've got all of these different dependencies, which are going to increase your compile time to complete the complexity of the thing. You're going to have bugs in there, which you don't even know what's going to happen. It could be exploits. You've now got things that download. People, it's just so easy to download. And then you're going to have conversion. It's just one of those things where, if you do it manually, which is, I know, sounds like, oh God, that sounds hard. It's like, no, you then actually know what dependencies you're putting in. You know exactly what's going to go here, what the costs, what the benefits for this. You're going to see where the versioning conflicts come in. You're going to see all these problems. And package managers sweep them under the rug as if they are, like, you shouldn't know about this. And this is, honestly, this is now the spicy take. That wasn't the spicy bit. The spicy bit is, because you've made it easier to get into dependency hell, this is why a lot of software is so bad nowadays. It's getting worse and worse because your people are just downloading more and more crap. Pardon my French. Oh, sorry, I should say nil in French. But it's just going to get worse and worse. And you're just toppling and wondering, like, well, my program, well, that run in 5 seconds. That was quick. And I'm thinking, wait, 5 seconds? That should be microseconds. But they think it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really sort of like underestimated when you're thinking about, like, designing a system, right, like your programming language as a system, is if you make it really easy to do something, then people are going to do it.
Right. So this is something happens. Yeah.
because it's very easy to do stupid things in C, people do stupid things in C.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to access outside of an array, you access outside the array. Whoopsies, and we're dead. You know, like, and it's just that simple. So then if it's very easy to add a new program, people are going to add new dependencies. Yeah. It's just, if all I have to do is type cargo add new crate, and it adds 85 crates, and that's totally fine, because I'm like, well, I just want to drive this one thing, and I don't really care, and I don't want to have to learn this other thing. So I do. Yeah, and then
and
you
this
just...
is the thing is, it's for prototyping, I'm not necessarily against them. Like, it's like you just want to get something done and see if it works. But there's a lot of people, and I will say a lot of developers, do not know the difference between a prototype and the product you're meant to ship.
Mm-hmm.
And the prototype, yeah, it can be really crusty. It could have whatever. As long as you know you, like, it's a proof of concept at that point, that's great. But when you're actually doing a real shipping product, you're like, right, here's the dependencies we have. We fix the versions. We never update them. And if we do update them, we do it so carefully and slowly. And you just do all that things. It's like, yeah, this is what you're doing. And you're trying to minimize them because you want to know where the flaws are. And also, people also seem to forget that package managers also have this issue where some of them try to say, well, you will have to depend on this range of versions as well. And it's like, no, you need to depend on a specific version, because guess what? People rely on bugs, and people aren't adhering to semantic versioning correctly. Like, there's so many of these idealistic views about how things work, and I'm like, it doesn't work in practice. And if anyone's ever worked on a big project, you'll know where the problems come. And then the other issue you can get is when you've got versioning sometimes, not versioning, and licensing for different packages, you might have accidentally pulled in a GPL code. Whoops! And now if you've got a commercial piece of software, you don't have a commercial piece of software anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge danger, by the way, that one.
Yeah. So this is a multifaceted problem. I could talk about this for literal hours, and I won't, but you've seen the general gist, and you can probably just guess the views down the thing just by picking at them and going further down and further down. So
we
I honestly
do
think
want to hear
that,
your opinion, by the way. This is your chance to go long on it. So we want the going long.
But no, this is what I mean. I think they are literally detrimental to software development. And that might go, what? People go like, so, I'm like, I know the benefits. I understand. But do you know the costs? Like, do you know the compromises you're making? And also like, oh, great. It's not going to work. Like at work, we have all our products. JangraFX, we have all our products, EmberGen, GeoGen, LiquidGen. And people go like, oh my God, they do so much. But how are they not even 30 megabytes in size, each executable? But they're not. And people get surprised by this. And I went, why would they be any bigger? And then we realize, oh yes, because most people, they pull in a web browser and stick it in there. They'll pull in all the different frameworks and all this stuff on top. They put like another Qt in there and probably three other UI rendering libraries for some bizarre reason. And then you'll have something that's three terabytes and people, I mean, it's not 3 terabytes, but yeah. They'll be like, oh, it's big enough. But they think, oh, of course it needs to be this big. And we're thinking, what? We're struggling. Like, we don't even know why it's that big, 30 megabytes. Why is it that big? And we think it's just the images we're embedding inside. That's why.
Yeah, 30, you can fit a lot of lines of code in 30 megabytes.
Yeah, and I think our entire code base at the moment is about 600,000 lines of Odin, plus the C++ dependencies we have. So probably in the range of a few million now. But yeah, and I think this is where I think people have forgotten that, how do I put it? That software development doesn't have to be this complicated or complex. It doesn't.
Programming can be done right, you know?
Exactly. And that's why I do have the tagline. People say, oh, do you mean that really? I'm like, no, really, there used to be a simpler way of doing things.
So,
yeah,
I'm not even asking for minimalism per se, like someone's saying in the chat. I am just saying, just don't do the dumb thing.
So, like, I guess my natural question would be, okay, I want to write a server in Odin. How do I get an HTTP server?
We are working on an official one soon. It's just, but there is currently one that's going to be the official one soon. We're just tweaking it soon there. But there's one by Layton, so Layton. He's a big contributor on the Odin Discord, and in general, Odin is wonderful. And that is a wonderful thing. In fact, that Odin HTTP server at the moment is beating all the benchmarks for all of the Go HTTP servers, and we're beating the vast majority. Not all of the Rust servers, though, but most of them, yeah, HTTP servers.
So in other words, is the idea that... Because the reason why people use package managers is because you don't want to implement that, right? Like, you probably should not hand roll your own HTTP server. We can all agree that's a great dependency.
Actually, I am going to disagree with that. I think everyone should at least learn how to write a HTTP server and then realize how flipping simple it is.
You know what? That's funny you should say that, because on boot.dev/prime, I'm about to be doing
that. No, but seriously, making HTTP 1.1 server is really simple.
Yeah, like, chunk encoding is about the most confusing part, and that's it.
Yeah, there's not much that difficult. HTTP as a protocol isn't that difficult, really. But once you've got to that point, at least, people are like, that wasn't that bad. Now, I do recommend, usually you don't need a fancy HTTP with more than that, then just use Nginx or Nginx. I don't know how you pronounce that really, but that one there, and then just use that together, and then just use that as your front end. So if you want to get the HTTPS bits or the different versions, just put that in front. Just use reverse proxy. But yeah.
All right. The reason why I was asking that is because I'm trying to get to an underlying concept, which is does Odin take in more dependencies into the standard library because you are trying to provide a more rich environment due to not having a package manager?
Partially, but also partially not. I do want batteries included in the core library, at least, and also the vendor. So the reason why is sometimes you do want third-party stuff, and that's absolutely fine. Clearly you need third-party stuff from time to time. But the core stuff is more like, we want there to be hey, 99% of programs can just use this. And then the vendor stuff, this is why we've put loads of the graphics APIs, all the stuff that people like for games and stuff like that. Not just games, but there's also cryptography stuff we've got in there. We've got loads of different networking stuff. Because it's look, we know what the good things are. I've been programming for a while. We know where the good libraries are. We can just include them for people and have the Python approach, which is kind of more the batteries included. If you've ever just used vanilla Python without using pip install, you'll realize actually their core library is pretty rich. And I can do quite a lot with it. And it's one of those where it's I'm not against... Again, I'm not against libraries, obviously. I love libraries. But it's just more of I don't want to have to download every single project. I'm okay, now I've done this. It's the vast majority of tools, we'll put everything in there. We've got a CSV parser in there. It's very nice to use. We've got the XML if you need it, JSON. We've got most of the things in there. I refuse to do YAML, by the way, because I absolutely hate YAML with a passion, but that's a different thing.
What about TAML?
Yeah, TOML's okay. I just prefer basic INI at the end of the day. I don't need the extra benefits of TOML. Yeah.
Okay. So YAML's going to be one that someone's going to have the third-party dependency.
Be a third party. Because the thing is, if you want to actually implement YAML, you have to use their library. Because it's, how do I put it? YAML's insane.
Yes, it also discriminates against Norwegian people.
Yeah, it does. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
No.
No.
Oh.
That's it's because it's no. For those that don't get the joke, it's NO is the Norwegian abbreviation. Yeah. So you get no, and no is also false in YAML. Yeah. So you get kind of owned by the Norwegian abbreviation.
Yep.
I'd be interested in your thoughts on because I know in the core, I guess standard distribution of Odin, I don't know what you would call it, because vendor is some ways third party, but it's part of.
Yeah, but we are the compiler vendor. So we're the official compiler vendor, right?
Right.
If you take Go, there are two the compilers for Go. There is the official Google one, and then there's the GCC one. Right, and they do ship different things, but clearly different compilers will be ever so slightly different, so they're different vendors. So for us, we just said, hey, we have our own vendor stuff, and here's all the libraries that we ship along with as well. Kind of thing, just to get you on. But we have, there's three different library collections, which is a bit weird compared to most languages, but we've done it on purpose. We have base, which is what every implementation of the compiler would have to implement. That's it. So it's effectively just the built-in stuff, the runtime, basics things, when I say runtime, I mean memcopy and memmove and stuff like that, those kind of things. And then there's the core stuff, which is the core functionality, you've got the OS calls, you've got your allocators, you've got your, what else is networking in there? All of the general stuff that needs to do like this. So maybe to format parsing, all that kind of that thing. And then we have vendor stuff, which is more the, hey, you want to make a window? You want to make do the graphics? Do you want to do some fancier networking for multiplayer stuff? Then, that's what we're going to put in there for you.
Just which is really cool. Having Raylib, I've made a little game yesterday in Raylib, and it's nice to not have to do anything. And also, one of the things that I think is interesting about vendoring that's maybe underrated as compared to package manager is you can just change the code.
Correct.
Right. And inside of the vendor. So for Raylib, there were a few things where there were overwritten methods that were basically more idiomatic Odin versions or over, sort of like papered over the fact that C lets you do really horrendous things and we can do something like smarter in Odin. And I think that that's kind of like underrated about vendoring, is that you can just change the code and you don't have to worry about like anything else. It's not going to, no one else is going to change it magically underneath you. Right. Like you just keep the vendored version that you have, which is awesome, as opposed to like applying
and not
a path
just that. It's also we're supporting it.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of official in a sense.
Right.
But it's also like, look, one of our libraries will be one of the more higher quality libraries out there as well, because we are trying to be as well polished as we can. It's not just some like, well, I've made a library, I'm just going to put it on GitHub, it'll be fine. No, this is more of a, I'm trying to say like, no, these are high quality things that we want to give to people and say, hey, this is the standard we want. Try and exceed it, please.
Yeah, okay. Which I like. It was very easy to get moving in Odin. I went from nothing to like a working like little game in like 8 hours.
Yeah, I know. I saw it. It was very fun to see. Yeah.
Do you think there's any downfalls to not having a package manager?
Of course.
Is there anything
are.
You feel like you're missing?
But I think the problem for me is some of the downfalls. It is prototyping. Like when I sometimes use Python from time to time. It's very much like, oh, I've got Python. Oh no, I need NumPy. I need to download that. I need to do something like that. But then it's like very much like that. Well, the packages I need are like three things: NumPy, Scitools, and Matplotlib. That's usually what I need when I'm using. You can guess I'm doing mathematics work really. And then that's all I need. But even then, it's like, well, I could just download them and it would just be fine. But the way that the like, package system works in Python isn't actually as nice. Like, I can't easily just copy and paste and just install it in there like I can in Odin. Like, a package in Odin is just a directory of files. So guess what? How do I install it? I download a directory, and I put it in there, and it works.
I like that. That's actually a pretty good segue to what TJ and I were. Yeah. TJ and I were both, I think we're both in fairly high agreement to this, and we would like to hear more from you about this. And it's
sure.
It seems like Odin has some a lot of inspiration from Rob Pike or Go.
Correct.
In the simplicity approach. And the specific one that TJ was talking about with by the way, TJ did all the footwork on this one. I did not do anything, so please don't thank TJ up here. But
Prime's doing the royal we over here. You know, in our investigations.
Very royal right now. But one thing that I absolutely have a hard time with is files as the module size.
Yeah.
And so to see file or to see folders or directories as the module size, I feel like is one of my, it made me so excited. It actually makes me want to use Odin because of that. So how do you kind of derive that type of inspiration? Because obviously you do things that are simple and then things like package management at a directory level. Like why did you choose that over file level? If we can, I know that's a very open.
No, question, I can give you. It was 18 months of research.
Okay. Keep
so
going.
I was, there are four different kind of general approaches that people do. So if I'm going to bring them out, there's the first one, C. C is everything is just one giant file and you just literally include everything. That's what include does. So when you actually pass something to a compiler, it's literally just pretending it's one giant file. There is only one giant global namespace. That's it.
Pragma once.
Oh yeah, I mean Pragma once is great in that regards, but it's like it's still that's how the pre-process works. There is no such thing as a library in C. Then you get C++. So C++ has namespaces. This was C++ 98 or something, or C++ 03. I don't remember which version it was, but they added namespaces. So namespaces were allow you could say a section off a block of code, and then these were like put into a namespace. Now the problem with that is that they have no real relationship, and you can just rewrite a new namespace anywhere, and they can be like, oh, his namespace foo, and then 10 million lines later or 10 million files later, they have another namespace foo. So they still don't get rid of the collision problem. They just kind of just saying, hey, we're just namespacing it. And in general, no one really likes namespaces if you want to do like consistent ABI. It's all a pain as well. So those two. So I just went, no, I've already experienced with them, just chucking them out. Now, the next two I knew I had very much loads of experience with. I would call this the Python approach and then the Go approach, right? So the Python approach is a file is a dictionary. So let's call it a namespace, yeah? So the file is a dictionary kind of thing. And you can just use that, and then you import different files. Python also has this little trick where if you have the underscore underscore init underscore underscore dot py thing, then now the directory pretends to be a file, which you can then export from that init file, yeah?
Yeah.
But that's just kind of a hack.
Node does the same thing with index.js. There's a lot
exactly,
of
those Yeah, there's loads of hacks, because you can notice when you're doing this, even in the Python case, they say, yeah, we like doing files, but then we're going to have this third, like another file, because we want to pretend to be directories. So this comes, this is where I'm saying it rises up, and what you have is I call it internally, I call it the diamond import problem. So it's simpler than you think. So let's say I have file A, right? I have file A, and I'm just, this is my packet, my library, just doing file A, what I need. Then I'm like, oh, I need to organize, I want to put it into file B. So now you've got to make the decision. So if I can try and get into the camera, you could probably zoom out because it might be a little bit too claustrophobic for people if I'm less zoomed in. I don't know. But there's the there's file A and file B if I'm trying to describe it. And it's thinking, okay, so does file A import B or B imports A? Now you have to kind of decide which one is now the library, right, to choose from. So then the problem is you might have a language like Odin does not allow for cyclic imports. So therefore, if you don't have cyclic imports, you'll be like, oh, A and B need to share stuff, so I need to put a third thing in top. Right. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. I've now got this third library that's now the utility thing, the shared thing. I now need a fourth file, sorry, just so that I can now import all of them. So now I've got these four files when I only really wanted two just to get around this. So that's what happens when you're at the file level with your like basic things. Now, if you just do what Go does, which is the fourth option, is where everything, every file in a directory with the same extension can just see each other. You've now got rid of the top thing and the bottom thing, and the bottom thing, which is the thing you would have imported, is actually just the directory, the container. So you're exploiting the file system. Just it's there. Why not use it? It's already got a hierarchy. Use the hierarchy that exists. Don't make another one on top. So
I think it's genuinely one of the best, like, forms. I cannot tell you how many times you often find yourself like creating two structs, and they both kind of need to have things referencing each other.
Yeah.
And you don't want one giant file. And so you're just like, I don't want a giant file. I want each of my functions to be kind of separate, but I want them, they're like the same package. They're all my game objects. Why do I have to have this, like, then I have to play the game of, you have to get like super clever with your file organization. And I'm spending too much time thinking about the fact that I'm organizing files as opposed to just programming the damn thing.
Exactly. This is one of those things where I was doing a research trying to think, like, is there another way? Because originally I was thinking like, oh, I want a directory based system, but sometimes I just want a single file as the package, right? Sometimes I just want that. And after a lot of research, I went, actually, yeah, maybe that's kind of what sometimes I want, but it's actually got some really big issues because very quickly that'll want another file and then you're already back to the directory thing. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like I thought, look, yes, I may have a single file, but just put it in a directory and it'll be better than having a better compromise because at least you've now got one way of defining a package, not two. So therefore, that's the whole point of going back to earlier, having a well-defined concept of a package within a language. And that is kind of trying to do that as well. Like, there's loads of little quirks in the package system when people come to do Odin. Like, for instance, in Go, similar reason, but not actually the same reason. In Odin, we have, like, the package declaration at the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which does say, like, package foo. And you think, many people ask, why does that even exist? Why can't I just use the directory name? And I'm like, yeah, that name at the top is actually for ABI. So that's the link name prefix.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, we still have to have I wanted a consistent ABI, like C. So I wanted to be able to know, like, oh, this is, when we actually have that symbol that says foo, and they have like the procedure has bar, internally, when you actually look at the linker symbols, it will say foo.bar. So that unique name at the top has to be unique through project-wise, but you could have the directories be similar names. The directories don't matter. They're just import paths.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. But there's this weird, sometimes like this weird quirks you'll find, but then you'll find like, oh, that's the reason why. And I'm like, oh, that makes perfect sense for a systems language.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that sometimes you have to ask that question, like, well, why is that there? And I'm like, well, I've solved this particular problem with this thing. Like, there's loads of those little things with the import system where you go, oh, I've tried to solve that problem, and this is why, because it exists in these languages, and they didn't have a good solution, so I had to come up with a good solution for it, kind of thing. Like, weirdly enough, in the import stuff, when I was talking about, like, the base, the core, and the vendor libraries, when you import them, you have to do, let's say, vendor, colon, and then the path. The vendor thing is actually kind of a named lookup, right? So just a directory mm-hmm. that's got your reference by name. This is a problem in C, if you have a program in C, because you've got choices of two includes. You have the angled brackets and the speech marks.
Mm-hmm.
The speech marks are relative to the current file. The angled brackets are, we read from a giant list until we find it. So this one just gives you a named import problem. I nicked that idea from Dart. It's the only good thing about Dart.
I'm still just stuck on speech marks. I'm sorry. I never heard that one before.
I don't know. Inverted commas, quote marks, whatever you want to call them. I don't know.
I was just surprised to hear speech marks.
I don't know. It's a Britishism, I guess. Speak different languages, I guess. So
yeah. Yeah, we speak English.
I don't even know what speech marks are. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but the proper
quotes.
Okay, speech mark, that's not real. But the proper English accent is actually Virginian. I don't know if you know that. That is the common.
No, I heard. Yeah, I was actually how do I put this? I was talking to a friend, and well, I'm not going to do it tonight because I can't do it. He was trying to get me to do American accent, and after a while, no, I'm not doing it. Trust me. Eventually, I just found it sounded like I was from Georgia. Like a southern country gentleman from Georgia. And he went, yeah, that was easy. I went, oh, so I guess that's what my accent would have been like 300 years ago. So yeah. I was like, oh, okay. It was quite natural. I can say bottle of water. I'm not a Londoner.
I don't know.
I don't understand this meme. It's bottle
of
water.
You said it very, 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 very. It sounds sophisticated. Somehow, for some odd reason, no. It just sounded better
than
a bottle of
water. No, it's just because us English people can pronounce T's.
Oh.
That's mainly it. And Americans just go, duh. All the time.
It's not a true. Bottle with a D.
Yeah.
Bottle. Yeah. That's how it sounds when I say it.
Bottle.
Bottle.
All right. Well, okay. Give us some more kind of inspirations throughout the code base that we're taking from other languages, because the package one, I think, makes a ton of sense. And anyone who's done any sophistication of a project automatically can latch onto that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing is it does scale well as well. Like we have a big code base, and I found that the package system does work. Some of my colleagues went, I want a bit more organization. I'm like, yeah, I know you do, but we have other colleagues. and that's half my problem. Like, it might be better for you, but I don't think that would scale for other people. And I think that's where, like, they're all competent programmers. Not a single one of them is bad. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. I'm still like, but that's just your taste. And sometimes other people's tastes don't like it. Like, some people, I hate beetroot, for example. Some people love it. But that's the thing. It's like, you can't force someone else's taste on you in that too much taste in that regard. Other things in language, how do I put this? When you do enums, .a, I nick that from Swift. Enums. And instead of doing like foo.a, I just do .a you can do. And it'll infer.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I think Zig has it as well, if I remember correctly.
Zig does, it's some anonymous stuff. I'm not sure about if it does it with enums.
I think it probably should do it with enums. And I think it does, I think it's what he does. But
I think
we both from the same source, which is Swift. So.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is there anything in Odin that you feel like you got wrong?
Oh, loads of things. How long have you got?
we got time.
Okay, so the first one was the using statement, okay? So in Odin, we have this feature called using, and there are kind of two different uses of it. I apologize, using and uses is going to be really confusing in a minute. But the using is a keyword, and one thing you can do is you can apply it to struct fields, and what this will do is effectively do a form of subtype polymorphism, if you know what that means. So literally all of those fields that if you've put using on a field in a struct, all the fields within that struct get added to that namespace. So you can just go, instead of doing like a.b.c, you can do a.c.
Okay, so it's like embedding and go.
It's embedding and go, but a little bit more explicit. Because the Go approach, Rob Pike did that in Plan 9c, like an extension to C. And I kind of went, I like that idea. Now, I nicked this idea specifically from Jonathan Blow's language, and I went, that's a great idea. And he also had another feature with it, which was using on statements. Now, I was originally going to have something like this before I even saw Jonathan Blow's language for this, and it comes from, like, Pascal's with. However, I actually regret adding this as a feature because I found that it just produces, like, unreadable, unmaintainable spaghetti code. So
when
this
say
does
with,
now
is it the similar the one that got deprecated from JavaScript? I think the only thing ever where
I think it's very similar.
It turns it into scoped variables. Is
correct?
That
yeah. So okay, in JavaScript that makes no sense because it's not a statically typed language. But in Pascal, it was
a very dangerous feature.
Oh yeah.
The more I see it, I'm like, ooh, gosh, that's a rough one.
So there was that aspect, which was a little bit. How do I put this? Yeah, in JavaScript it's really bad, but in Pascal it was okay. It was okay. And I added Odin. I thought, oh, this is even better because I don't even have to have the block. I can just use it, using everywhere. And it becomes a maintaining nightmare. Now, sometimes it's really useful for, like, refactoring code, which is why I still have it. Like, it really is just for transitionary, like, I'm refactoring code around, do this, and, like, then I'll fix it up. But I tell everyone, just try not to use it, please. Don't use it as a statement. Use it as a struct field thing for the embedding. That's great. That's absolutely wonderful. Virtually no issues there. But it has, like, statement thing is like, oh, God, this is a mistake.
Do you think it's a... So my understanding from the feature is you can use using on both like a variable, and it will pull in all of the like fields from that struct.
Correct.
Into like a into variables that you can use basically.
Yes.
In that.
Correct. Yes.
But you can also use it on like a like an imported like module or package, I guess.
No, maybe. I actually disallowed using import at the file scope because again, this becomes another. I'm reading code. I'm like, where's it coming from?
Okay. Yep.
But you can allow using on a module within like a procedure body still, which is what the using statement allows. But I still think that's bad. Personally.
Okay. That was the one where I could see that one is like a bit nicer, where you're sort of like, oh, inside of this function, I'm going to call, you know, this is my only function where I reference the like 35 Raylib functions. I want to just like drop putting Raylib prefix. I could see that one being good.
But the R, but I know this sounds silly, but RL dot is three extra characters. Type.
Right. I agree. I didn't write using RL.
It's not like we're doing Java where I'm doing like foo.bar.daz.thing. Right. Thing. Yeah. It's not that.
Yeah.
People do that in C++. There's using standard all over the
place. Oh, God. There's loads of stuff I've seen where they do that. And it's like using namespace is a great example of. That just means it's bad, bad code.
Yeah, to be honest, I was surprised by the using statement. There were not a lot of things where I was surprised as I was reading through Odin. But
no,
I was
it's one of those where, like, I know it's surprising, but it's also at the same time, I'm like, it has its uses, but it's bad.
One thing that I thought was interesting, just sort of overall for Odin, I'd be really interested in sort of how you draw the line on this is I was surprised by in a good way, like how many times Odin did like a really pragmatic thing that I just thought was really cool. So like the simplest one that I think people can easily appreciate is like the swizzling for vectors and everything. And so, if, so for example, for people in chat, let's say you have some like four floats in like a on the stack. Would you call it an array still if it was on the stack?
Yeah, it's still an array in Odin. Yeah, an array of four floats,
To access the first item, you can do like classic angle brackets with zero, which makes sense because we're dealing with pointers, not like in other languages.
They're not even pointers in Odin, but carry on.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, we're dealing with the actual memory as opposed to like, you know, I've been doing a long running, you know, somewhat joke, somewhat not joke about one-based indexing making sense for higher level languages.
No, I still have the video,
Okay, so and, after this, I want to hear your thoughts on that. But, But so you can access the first item with zero, because first is zero, obviously. But you can also do dot .r, because like dot .rgba, right? Yep. Or you can do dot .x, as in dot .xyz. And so I just thought that that was like really convenient, because most of the time when I'm doing this, I do xyz. I make three things stored as like a float. And then it's, you know, three floats in a row. And I don't have to worry that like, oh, so-and-so made this vector type and this guy made this vector type and we have this like array and you just like can ignore that that's happening. So I was wondering, how do you decide which ones of those are actually like worth the, I don't know, additional feature set to the language, right?
Yes.
Versus not. Where do you draw that like really pragmatic line? Because obviously like a Haskeller, when they read that, is going to like throw up because thinking that's not the purest form of possible programming language. You could not know that the first thing is going to be X. Don't you know that in abstract complex mathematics, sometimes we put I first? And so, you know, they're just like, they're freaking out. So where do you draw that line for Odin?
Yeah. So firstly, with this one here, the swizzling stuff comes from GLSL, right? If you've ever done shader language stuff, you'll be using it all the time. You're like, oh my God, it's so much useful to use and literally how productive you are doing it all. That's the first thing. The second thing is that swizzling or shuffling are hardware instructions. They map directly to hardware instructions. So people forget like, no, the hardware does this. So it's like the abstraction works really well because you're expressing something that exists. Because in Odin, it's not just .x and .y. You can do .xxy or .yyz if you like Rush. And that's kind of what things go on here.
What is .yyz? For us that don't understand that, what is .xxy? Yeah, what does that mean?
No. So like literally it means you would have, okay, I'm going to create a new array with three elements. And the first element, zeroth element is going to be x. The next element is going to be an x. And the other one's going to be y. So it's literally just taking like those things and putting them into a new thing for you. It's a really simple thing. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very useful for when... It's not just for like graphics. It's actually, you'll find it in many other places where you'll start using this, especially when you start trying to do like the SIMD level stuff. So like when you're trying to do loads of like really high performance code, Which even could even to do with just like string, literally string manipulation. Like someone's just written, rewrote the indexed byte function to be completely SIMD based. And stuff like that does help. It really does, like, just minor things like that. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for coming on here and talking to us about all of this.
No, it's wonderful.
This is kind of the end of the top shelf public version. Ooh. We're going to be going off to the Discord. You joined the Discord, right? And we're going to be going to a special area in which just the top shelf members can ask questions because, no offense, Twitch, the cumulative IQ goes down as the number goes up. We're not really sure what it is, but the math equation is very confusing. So
we didn't know the scale went past zero, but it turns out it's not unsigned. Like,
no, we can go all the way below zero. Don't worry. It's an infinite scale. Yeah.
So thank you everybody for joining us. Hey, Ginger, thank you so much. I'll make sure that both TJ and your stuff is linked in the YouTube video everyone can go and find all that. And you can whisper me any extra stuff that you want.
Sure, no problem.
LinkedIn on all that. I think generally everybody really loved it. I love your takes on LSPs and package management because it is it feels counterintuitive to, I think, this day and age. And
yes,
there's a lot of value in exploring those things to actually make sure.
Indeed. And as you were saying earlier, many people think it's the common wisdom, but my view is there is no wisdom in programming at the moment because we're such a young profession, 70 years at most. We aren't old enough to have any wisdom.
Yeah. And high-level languages have only existed for just like 20, 30 years, depending on how what you call high-level.
Well, if you cut classes Fortran, then maybe Fortran was the late 50s. So,
56, I think.
Yeah. So even then, you're right, even the higher level ones. But I think most languages haven't really changed that much since the 80s, really. Yeah. So we're kind of still in that area, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So,
and we're getting different hardware too, which is very different from what it used to be.
Oh, very much so.
You know, one of the things I appreciated reading through Odin as our last thing, Flip, you can keep this in, that there's a recognition that like some things made sense for the hardware that like C was made for, maybe it made sense for us to do null terminated strings just because we couldn't afford to keep the extra integer around and we couldn't afford to like go traverse all this other, and you're like, okay, that makes sense. But now we could just keep track of the length of the string.
Yeah.
We can just do that. Like, it's probably better. We can do it. It's all right. And I liked that there's like this distinction of, we can just sort these things out. Or for example, structure of arrays versus, array of structures where we're like, pipelining and data cache and L1, L2, L3, we can actually like greatly improve how fast we can do some stuff by just making it easy in the language to do the hardware things, which I think is great. And I like that a lot.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have not done any structure of arrays yet. And so that is something I'm hoping to.
It's probably something you won't actually ever need. But to explain what it is, it's think of it like databases. Is it laid out in rows or is it laid out in columns? That's it.
I'm going to be doing some game programming, okay?
Won't need it. This is about, when I say game programming to people, is I just go do the dumbest thing possible, be completely grub-brained,
and
you'll actually have something good. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair.
No, and that's it. Don't even try to be fancy. God, this is my last spicy take of the evening. The amount of times, I probably get asked this every day, like, how do I make an ESC, entity component system in Odin? I say, please don't do this. It's not for you. It's never for anyone, virtually. Like, if you know exactly how to implement one, you wouldn't be asking the question. And if you know how to implement one, you know if it's good or not. So just, it's not for you. Like, that, regardless of the language, that has nothing to do with the language. That's just very much like, it's overkill, man. Don't do it.
That was beautiful. That was absolutely beautiful right there.